Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays normally, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I tell you, my friends, I tell you, what a wonderful, wonderful experience I had recently with many of you. Wonderful experience to meet many of you. And I realized that part of what happened, we had a small opening celebration of a film that we did. And many of you had come down to the film, and there I was finally meeting many of the audience that I had never met before, and meeting Gino and some of the other folks, Linda Myers and some of her friends and a whole bunch of other folks who I had never met before. A delight, an absolute delight. And then, of course, I stood up in front of the audience and I led them through something that was so quick and so easy. It was 20 minutes of a delightful experience. But I realized something. I realized that this is something I do and I've done, and I've done so many times before, as I have watched so many other people do workshops and seminars and speak in front of large groups. Well, I remember one time I was in Philadelphia and I had to speak to 2,000 people. And I had an audience of 2,000 people, and I had a task. It was 2,000 people I had to address, and I had to get 2,000 people to walk 2 miles in 102-degree weather, and it was a thing called the processional, and it was during the Association for Humanistic Psychology, and we had to organize it. And somebody had to be the leader, and I was the leader, and it was like, oh, it was a great event, and we had to get these people to go this distance to the opening ceremony. 2,000 people, all right. Then there was an opening ceremony, and there was another time I had to address 2,000 people. How do you do it, is what someone asked me. How do you talk to 2,000 people? And I said, well, I guess over time, I just felt more and more comfortable with it. Of course, last week, it was just a couple of hundred people, but I just got more and more comfortable over time. But it makes me remember that at one point, I was very uncomfortable. My first time I ever got on stage, first time I ever got on radio, I was very uncomfortable. I was very nervous. First time I was a guest on radio, I was a very nervous guy. That was like 30 years ago. I got on and I was nervous and I was just shaking, and I could remember, you know, not able to speak. Which brings me to this whole concept of what is socialization? What is social fear? Because when we were at this thing last week and I sat there with so many of my wonderful friends from WBAI, I noticed there were people who came to see me who were very isolated, very alone. And you could tell they were social, but not social. They were comfortable with me, so I mean, they came over to me and they hugged me and they shook my hands and we took pictures together. But when I noticed them in the room, I would introduce them to each other. And they didn't know what to say to each other. They were uncomfortable in groups, in small groups, because this wasn't the thing. This is, some people are comfortable socially and other people are not. It's a social instinct that we have. If you have a social instinct that is not very developed, attending to social endeavors and social commitments does not come naturally. It's a far stretch for you to reach out and touch a lot of people because there's a major fear. In a recent article that appeared in Psychology Today this past week, they were looking at social anxiety and social phobia. And what they covered and what they mostly pointed to was that the primary reason that people are afraid to get out there in the world and present themselves socially is because you're afraid of making a fool of yourself. You're afraid that if you present yourself, someone is going to laugh at you. Well, how does that make sense? Why would you worry about somebody laughing at you? Why would social phobia have such a common thread among so many people? That's a real question. Social phobia always seems to be related to school phobia. School phobia is an interesting thing. In school phobia, you're not afraid that people are going to laugh at you. You're afraid that your house is going to burn down when you're not home. You see? So how does that relate? It's a different kind of fear. But if you have social phobia, sometimes you had school phobia when you were younger. So are any of these fears real? Or are they just something going on in your mind? That's what we're going to look at today. We're going to look at your social adaptability and whether or not all of this socialization process that you go through, all the caveats, all the warnings, all the things you're afraid of, whether they've got a real base or an unreal base. I mean, for all we know, some people are born with certain chemicals and other people are born with other chemicals. Let's say you've got a shortage of testosterone and a certain amount of testosterone. We all have, as you know, 17.4 ounces of testosterone. I made that up. It's just a statistic that I like to do. We all have a certain amount of testosterone, men and women. And let's say you're shortchanged in your testosterone. Well, just if you happen to have a couple of ounces short, maybe as a kid you don't feel like you have the right aggressive tools. And therefore you're afraid to go out in the world because you're afraid you're going to get eaten up by the other animals. Maybe you don't have enough dopamine. Maybe you don't have enough of the chemicals that say you're going to be safe in the world. Maybe you don't have enough oxytocin. Maybe there's the stuff that says, you know, you're supposed to bond with other people. Maybe there's a chemical imbalance that says you're just not like other people. Do any of you feel like, you know, you're really separated from the rest of the world? That you're not like other people? Did you ever get that feeling? Maybe it's based on some chemical imbalance. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Possible Mind. A new word. Most shy people would be surprised to learn that 40% of all young people today describe themselves as shy. 40%. And the rate continues to creep up by 1% every year. So next year it'll be 41%, the year after it'll be 42%. 70 years from now, 101% of the people will consider themselves shy. Researchers attribute the rise in self-identified shyness to reduced face-to-face communication because now people are having much more interaction through cell phones and computers. And so there's less face-to-face going on, much less face-to-face interactions. You're not forced to it, and people are becoming more and more interactive shy. You don't meet a person. Shyness can also be inherited. A guy named Jerome Kagan at Harvard University, about 20% of infants reacted to stimulus like new toys by squirming and whimpering. And those infants came from parents who were shy. See? Which is kind of an interesting thing. New research shows that some who are shy have a variant gene involved in the flow of serotonin, which makes them especially reactive to stress. So if you have this kind of thing, you have a greater stress reaction. So this is kind of, we're beginning to learn that it's, you're kind of built a certain way, you get a certain nervous, and that it is not that you're psychologically unsound. I mean, if you were a deer and you walked into a world of lions, would you be shy? I would be. You know? If you were, of course you would be. because it is possible you get eaten up. Many people feel like a deer walking into a world of lions. Well, what's the difference? The difference is the perception. The difference is that you are not a deer, but you feel like a deer. And the people are not lions, but they feel like lions. So it means a part of you feels vulnerable. How can you do it? What can you do to deal with this? We're going to approach that. And we're going to talk about social shyness. Because maybe if you've got it, maybe if you feel you want to get out, maybe we can do something about it. Here I was in a room with 200 very, very, very beautiful people, many of whom came with a friend, but many of whom could not connect to other people in the room. They would love to have just met each other. Some of you did meet each other. If you were there, give us a call, 212-209-2950. If you weren't there, you could give us a call anyway. If you want to talk about your social shyness, if you're too socially shy to call us, you could send us an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. And I'll go through the emails at the half-hour break. So it's a telephone call, 212-209-2950. Or it's an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. We are talking about... Oh, I'm sorry, it's 2900. I'm thinking about donations already, Michael, for the next fund drive. 212-209-2900. Thank you. Phones are probably ringing in the tally room right now. 212-209-2900. Public speaking, let's talk about that. Don't you think it must be a difficult thing to speak publicly? Imagine if you're a shy person, what it's like to speak publicly. Now, I have seen many people who were so inhibited, including Roberta Atti, who stuttered through most of her childhood, overcome that kind of shyness. Now, Roberta still stutters, by the way. But you can, it's barely noticeable. And when she does, she just sails right through it. And she speaks publicly to hundreds of people. I have watched people have stage fright and go through it. I remember the story of Bernie Grad. I got to tell you, Bernie Grad. Bernie Grad is a professor up in McGill University in Toronto. Now, McGill University is in a very interesting place. Wilhelm Reich, the psychologist, worked there. Bernie Grad was his assistant. Bernie Grad's job was to measure Wilhelm Reich's studies. He studied energy, and he did energy studies. And Bernie Grad was this short little guy. He was just like 5'6", 5'5". He had a bald head. He looked a little like Mr. Peepers. And Bernie Grad would get up there, and he had these film... He would show you a slideshow, and it was the most boring slideshow in the world. It was terrible. Now, on top of that, by this time, which was in the early 80s, I was doing presentations, and I was doing real sock'em, knock'em, dynamic presentations with music and movement, and I had people moving all over the place, and they were just really rocking. And so we had this presentation where Bernie Grad was going to present and I was going to present. And Bernie's very dry. I mean, a very, very dry presentation, a scientist, you know. But they happened to put us on one after the other. And I went up there on stage and I did my thing. And I had people jumping and dancing and shaking hands and having a grand time. And then Bernie Grad comes next up on stage. And Bernie Grad comes up and I tell you, he's... had to be the worst presenter in the world. He was fumbling with his slides that he was trying to throw up on a screen, and the screen kept falling down. And he walks up out on stage, and he trips over the wires. And he knocks over his machine. And he says, "Oh, my wife told me I was going to do something like this," and the audience laughed. And they laughed, and Bernie Grad did something. And he said, "Well, my wife's like that." He caught the laughter. And he rode the laughter. He said, "You should meet my wife." Now, Bernie Grad never told a joke in his life. But suddenly, the audience was eating out of his hands. And he did his presentation, and every time he fumbled, he made a little joke out of it. And Bernie Glad was the most lovable presenter. He got a standing ovation. He was terrific. So one of the things, my friends, that I say to you is go for the laughs. When you're doing a presentation, try to keep in mind that if you feel embarrassed and you've got to do some public speaking, don't be afraid of going for the laughs. As you deliver important information, take breaks to entertain your audience. An anecdote, a self-effacing joke. You know, it's humor is employed in a way that makes people just get on your side. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls, and we'll continue with this. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, Armand. This is a very fascinating show you had today.
Great, thank you.
I was just wondering about the question that you were asking about what causes social shyness, and, you know, I think there's a lot of things with dealing with human behavior. I think part of it is genetic, but a big part of it is your social upbringing. I mean, in my personal life, I had a very sheltered upbringing, and I found out when I was thrusted into social situations, you know, I had that horrible, you know, paranoia, and, you know, I was always unsure of myself, and it was the kind of thing as time went on and I practiced more and more dealing with other people, I found myself more comfortable being myself, and you know, part of it is that, you know, human beings are social animals. I mean, we want to be in a group. We want to have a hierarchy. We always look to see, you know, who is our peer and who do we look up to. And part of that embarrassment is part of it, I think, is coming to the realization that you're never going to be able to emulate anybody. And you're always going to have that fear that what you're doing is not going to be okay with the group that you've put yourself in, you know. And I think that's probably a problem that most people deal with, is how to separate being in a social group versus being your own individual, because individuality has been, you know, thrust upon us more and more every day, but at the same time, there's still all these social forces that manipulate us and put us into categories and try to push us into directions. And now I think nowadays a lot of people have that problem where it's like, well, society says one thing, I feel a different way, and now we're not connecting anymore.
Well, that's really well said, but there's another, what's your name?
Hugo.
Hugo. You know, Hugo, but there's another aspect here that you're alluding to, which is, of course, a big dynamic. Your father abandoned you, which was the important element here.
What do you mean by that? My father didn't leave me.
What?
My father didn't leave me.
No, not leave you physically, but he abandoned you as a father. He wasn't there for you.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that is part of true. That's something about my own life. I as I grew up and got older and got out of all the angst of being a teenager and whatnot, and I looked back and I said, you know, part of my problem was that my father was never, he was there, he provided and took care of us.
But he was never there.
Right, but he was never there emotionally for me. And
see,
you're right,
now right there, Hugo, you've got the element. When you have a father who's there but not there, then you don't have that kind of feedback system that makes you feel real. And when you talk about paranoia and doubt, when you get out in the world, you don't have that kind of muscle that comes from the foundation of somebody who's got a loving father. So you, Hugo, had to do it on your own. You had to develop it on your own. And you overcame this on your own. You tested the world. You know, you put your toe in, you pulled it out, and you didn't quit. Because you could have gotten really scared of this world. You could have let that paranoia take over. And instead, you became your own father.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I guess I see your point in that.
Did you ever have any children?
No, I haven't had any children yet. But that is something like me and my girlfriend now speak about, you know, because she understands my upbringing. And, you know, she's always talking, and we always talk about it. And I said, the one thing I'm definitely not going to do, and my father didn't do, what my father did do was, you know, I know the most important thing now is to be emotionally there for your children. It's not just, you know, you provide for them and you give them food and clothing and then you expect them to run off and do their own thing. You really have to be there. If not, you know, there's a lot of important social interactions that don't ever get taught between people because you don't talk to your parents. You don't spend time with your children. You don't try to get them engaged in either things that they're doing or things that you're doing that they might like.
Yeah. You know, you just got to play catch. You know, yeah. You know, you just got to play catch. You just got to do something that puts you present.
But you know what it is also? I also notice it's also another thing where it's, you know, you have to instruct your children. It's sort of like, I see a lot of parents, you know, because I'm older now, I'm 30 now. A lot of my friends have children, and I know a lot of other parents around my age, and I just always notice the kind of thing where it's like, oh, I can never talk to my kids about that. And I always go, well, why can't you talk to your kids about that? Don't you think that the information should come from you first before they go wander off and pick up any other random piece of information? I mean, I'm sure everyone remembers growing up and being in the schoolyard and hearing all those crazy, you know, sexual theories that were spun around in the schoolyard. And, you know, I was always... growing up now, I look back in those times, I'm like, man, you know, if my father had just sat me down and just explained certain things to me, would have wrapped up a lot of confusion that I think a lot of people have growing up. And that's just not just in one arena, but in a lot of other arenas, too, in terms of how to deal with people or how to deal with situations.
You know, and you'll do it as you feel it, Hugo. You know, so I wish you a lot of luck. Sounds like you're going to be a wonderful dad.
All right, well, thank you. It was a very nice program.
And thank you so much for calling. 212-209-2900. So as you see, we have another factor in socialization, which has to be self-confidence, as is garnered from your relationship with your father or your mother, and sisters and brothers as well. But you know, there is something about that supportive relationship that you get where you feel solid. And when I say play catch, I remember watching a man. I remember Thanksgiving. I was invited over to someone's house. And at the end of the day, they went out and they played football. You know, and there was a lot of brothers and sisters and cousins. And I remember the father, who was the head of the family. He was playing football, and he was there, and all the other brothers were there. And he was playing, and he was competing so hard, and he was so angry. And he threw that ball, and he threw the ball to one of his sons so hard that it smashed his son's face. Son was like about 25, 26 years old. The son didn't catch the ball. His face was all bruised. He came inside, and the father was angry at him because he didn't catch the ball and didn't score the winning touchdown. And I looked at this Thanksgiving game, and I saw this son who was damaged, who later became a taxi driver, and then after that became a drug addict and kind of fell away into some kind of a treatment program. And I said to myself right there, you know, I said, so this is not going to be the thing that builds spirit. The thing that builds spirit is catch, not throw. 212-209-2900, Armando Millis. Take another call. This is you're on the phone. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you.
Sure. Hi there.
Hi. Hello. Is this Armand?
Yes.
Hi. My name is Lorna. I'm sort of going off the topic, if that's possible or okay.
Well, let's see what happens.
Okay. I'm reaching out to you because I had experienced a really bad depression, and then I've been obsessing over trying to get to the heart of the matter of it, get to the bottom of it, and I think I have some understanding, and I'm even scared to... basically, I've recognized that I really, my childhood, I was brought up with tons of theater and music, and as a young adult, I had to go into the real world and make a living, so I chose advertising, and a part of me got so frustrated that I wasn't doing creative work every day, and I sunk into a depression, and now I'm out of the depression, and I'm ready to try life again, and I'm in advertising again, but this time knowing that I have a goal that eventually I want to be an acting teacher. I am afraid to, as I begin to make any sort of success, that I'm going to have this feeling of wanting to connect so badly to the world, and I'm afraid of success even. I'm afraid that I'm going to make bad choices. Like, I feel like I have depression, OCD, and hypomania to worry about.
Yeah, you need a couple of aspirin.
No, yeah.
No, you know, Lorna, what you have is a very active brain. And your mind is so active, it's not giving your heart or your spirit a chance to work. What you're doing is you're overthinking yourself, of course, and you know this.
Yeah.
You have OCD, and you're obsessing, right? And you're thinking about your depression. Now, here's the problem we have. Depression is an emotional state. So it's not about thinking your way out of it. You don't think your way out of depression. You feel your way through depression. Think of depression as an iceberg.
Okay.
And in the iceberg, you know, you have a little bit of the iceberg above the top of the water, and that's the piece you see, and that's the thinking part of it. And then there's this tremendous emotion under the water. And you're not going to get through it by trying to think through it because there's this huge heart that's under there.
What should I do, Armand?
You need to go through the heart. You need to get through the emotions of it, not get through the thinking of it because you're too smart for yourself.
Right.
You overthink.
Right.
You're a big thinker.
If I allow myself to feel...
You better not do it alone. You need somebody to guide you through it, through the thinking part, not a therapist who's going to take you through the feeling part, not somebody who's going to take you through the thinking part. Go to my website.
Okay.
And look up, there's a part of the website that talks about intense feeling psychotherapy.
Okay.
Okay, it's under thepositivemind.com. Look at that. That would usually get much better results with that, with depression, than you do with figuring it out.
What if I actually start to feel, and I'm actually grateful for the fact that I have so much feelings? Where does that, I don't want to be destructive when I start to feel.
More thinking.
It's more thinking,
you know.
Okay.
It's more thinking.
So just let the brain go and just really feel.
Let the brain go and let yourself float into your own magnificent success. You're going to do fine.
Can I trust my feelings?
No. No.
So how am I?
You don't know your feelings. You know, your feelings, what you call your feelings are not your feelings. What you're talking about are the immediate emotions that you have. That's not the depth of it. You got to get down to the bottom of it. So you don't know how to recognize a feeling because you think about everything.
Well, I used to do music and theater all the time, which allowed me to go there and...
What I'm saying is it's a little too much to go into right now. You would need an individual long time to talk about it. Go peruse that website. Look at that stuff. Give me a call. We'll talk about it.
Okay. I appreciate your time.
Sure. Thanks for calling in. It is a little off the subject, but it's about the same thing, you know? Because a lot of people feel the same way. They're afraid to get out there in the world. But so often, people use their brains just a little too much. When all they need is their heart and a smile. In fact, maybe I'll give you a little something for your smile. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a short break. I'll give you a little music by Chris Fieris. And then I'll come back and we'll talk about this social aliveness. Spheeris. S-P-H-E-E-R-I-S. Chris Spheeris, Slow Dance. Sure sounds like a good slow dance, doesn't it? Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Working Woman's Week, 2 days this week, tomorrow and the next day, March 7th and 8th, are dedicated to the working woman. And working women are invited to participate in WBAI and doing presentations for BAI. It's really a fabulous thing they do once a year. So we preempt our programs so that other people can come aboard and give you presentations about working women. So I will not be with you for Wednesday or Thursday of this week. I'll be back with you on March 13th, Tuesday, with Frank Yeoman, who is going to be doing a presentation on narcissism. Now, this is a really fascinating thing because Dr. Frank Yeoman is one of the world's leading authorities on narcissism. He's the greatest. It's a joke, you see, on narcissism. But he's also really good, and I like him a lot. March 14th, don't forget, my friends, is Pi Day. Pi Day, look it up, Pi Day, the day that Albert Einstein and other notaries were born. March 14th, yep, it's Wednesday. We've been talking about socialization, social phobia, social fear, social disorders, and we've been talking about how you kind of get yourself out there in the world, and how important is it, you know? Is it important at all? I mean, why don't you just live by yourself? Do it alone. More and more people are doing it. More and more people are saying, give me my computer. Let me order my food in. Open up another deep dish pizza place and I'll order my food in. And I'll watch TV, and I have TiVo, and I have 400 channels. And a computer, and what the hell, I'll stay home and stay stoned. That'll be the new cry of the year 2000. You know, remember it used to be tune in, and what was Timothy Leary's expression? You don't know, that goes way before your time. He used to say drop acid and just, tune out. But now it's going to be really, just get stoned however you get stoned, and go look at your computer and go shopping on the internet and go to eBay and go buy yourself something. And you don't have to go out at all. You don't have to be part of this world. You don't need a house. You could just get a little apartment and have a little working space with your computer, and that's what's happening. And it's okay. If that's the way it's meant to be, that's the way it's meant to be. But there's a problem here. I miss you. You're not out there anymore. So when I have a gathering and a few hundred people get together, a couple of hundred people get together, and I see these charming, beautiful faces, I mean just gorgeous, wonderful faces come over, and they come around, and they're hugging each other, and they're hugging me, and they're saying, hi, we love to listen to you, and I love, them listening, and we greet each other. It's such a wonderful thing. I mean, it's such a fabulous thing that they're out of the house. Brooklyn Academy of Music. Fabulous thing. So I think it's important that we do what we can to touch this world and not withdraw from it. I think we, who are the somewhat conscious, need to touch the world of the somewhat less conscious. So when we get out there, if we go down the street and we see somebody angry and we smile at somebody angry and that somebody says, oh, what a jerk, he's smiling. It's okay, that smile got to him on some level. I'm perfectly happy with that. I'll be that jerk for that man. If we could do anything to touch anybody, The other day I was walking down the street and some kid threw a wrapper on the floor. And it was, and I was really feeling broken that day, but I bent over and I picked up that wrapper. And I went after it, and it blew away from me. I went after it to pick it up. And I picked it up, and there was somebody in back of me who went after it instead of me and picked it up and threw it in the garbage. And we kind of recognized each other. And we had a relationship. It was right there. It was right, hi there. So, anything we could do to socialize seems to be not that you should do it out of guilt, but it's great. I mean, having babies is one thing. That's one piece of socializing. Doing a radio show, that's another piece of socializing. But every minute of every day, just passing somebody by and giving them a smile and saying hello, that's even more important. If everybody did that, it would be fantastic. So let's look at what gets in the way. What gets in the way is fear. What gets in the way? The fear that you would be wrong. The fear that you think in some way you would not be welcomed, which you might not be. The fear that you might do it wrong. The fear that people would laugh at you. So you have to do something about it. What are you avoiding? What are you avoiding? Let's say that there's somebody at your work that makes you disappear. How could you be more visible at work? Let's say you need to confront someone at the office and you assert your own best interest, but your prospect fills you with anxiety. To counter this, you hide. How many people, how many of you hide at work? What can you do about it? You know, one of the things you do that is, of course, is you build up the size of the other person. You make this other person have so much power. And it, somehow, in your mind, you have to shrink their power. You have to just see that they're just humans. I find one very good thing to do. I know it sounds terrible. But whenever you see anybody who intimidates you, go to the bathroom with them. Just you go to the bathroom with them, not for any particular reason. Go to the bathroom with them. The bathroom is a great equalizer. You know, it really is a great equalizer. It's like it's a place where you know, you don't have to do anything in particular, and you certainly don't have to comment very much. But a bathroom is a place of mutuality. You know, if somebody's coming out from one place, walking out with you, it's like it's a place where you don't talk. But it's a place where you can feel yourself relaxing a little. You know, being friendly with somebody does not mean teasing them. Don't tease people. That's not a way. Don't try not to do laughter at the cost of other people. That's not a way of being friendly with people. It's not a way of getting people to like you. And whatever you do, try not, don't go for gossip. Because if one of the ways that people join with each other is they do it through gossip. And even though you think it's the way to get into the in crowd, it's not. Because if you gossip about someone, nobody's going to trust you. They know you're going to gossip about them. So the best way to do it is to avoid. Never say anything about a person that you would not say directly to them yourself. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. We're going to take a couple of more calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. 212-209, I just knocked that up on you, Michael, I'm sorry. 212-209-2900, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Armand. My name is Lynn. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm on a cell phone. I've been driving through my shop and listening to you, and I wanted to tell you how I overcame fear of speaking. Obviously, I don't have any fear of speaking. I thought about what you said about it's all from fear, and I thought, you know what? He's right. I think it's an innate fear that all children have, because if you look at little children when they're in school and they get up to do their little kindergarten play in front of their parents, you have little kids who are kicking their ankles and looking down, and they're afraid. you're inhibited, and it's a natural born thing. Then you have this one child in a million who gets out there and tap dances and is afraid of nothing. And we grow up with that, and I certainly grew up with that feeling. And now I can get up and talk in front of anybody, and I'll tell you how I did that. It was having a shop, talking to strangers every day, looking into their eyes, connecting with them as human beings, and learning that I had nothing to be afraid of. And as I got older, and I'm going to be 69 in April, I learned to trust myself and like myself, and I started to think, you know what? I'm trusting them to accept me. And now I've gotten up and I've talked to large groups, small groups, friends, and I have no fear anymore. I might be a little nervous. Once I get going, I'm all right. Because I know that they are trusting me because I trust them. And
so what was it about eye contact that made the difference?
What made the difference? Oh, you did? I'm going on that. Well, once I got out into the public a lot, where I was with them every day, I have a little store. I just pulled up behind it. I'm going in there to work. I started meeting dozens of people, and I started thinking of them as innate humans like myself. They'd come in well-dressed. Some of them were poor. Some of them were shabby. I started treating them all exactly alike, and I started looking into their eyes, and they saw something in me. They saw that I accepted myself, and I accepted them. And it didn't matter who they were, what they were, and I felt comfortable with them. And because I felt comfortable, and I started liking humans no matter where they came from, what they did, I saw something vulnerable in every human being. I saw it myself. I started learning about myself. And as I got older, and believe me, I came with a lot of baggage in my early little days. As I got older, every 10 years that has gone by, I have now come to a point in my life where I really understand myself. And it's been a long, hard thing. But it's helped me be really happy because I realize that it is fear. We're afraid of what's going to hurt us. And
what kind of shop did you have?
I have a store right now. I have a little consignment store in Atlantic Highlands, which is right across the harbor from Manhattan. And so,
anybody in Atlantic Highlands wants to go visit the shop from this lovely lady? You know right where it is? You who are out there all know this place.
Well, you know what? You know what's happened in the last 7 years? My sister, who is a practicing Tibetan Buddhist, and we just had a long talk today. She lives in Washington State. She said, when I came to your store, I found that it was more than a shop. It's a clearing zone. People
it's a
come
haven,
in there.
Yeah.
They want contact. She says we all want contact, and they come in there to make that contact. And I'm happy to do that. But I learned from them too.
Your name?
My name is Lynn.
Lynn, I want to thank you very much for calling out. You are a lesson.
Thank you. I love your show. Bye.
Thank you. So there we are in our Highland. We should probably put this on the air. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there.
Surprise. Hello, Armand.
Hi there.
Good day. I'd like to say about the event at BAM.
Could you turn down your radio?
It's down now.
Okay, great.
Yes, I just like to say I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed meeting you. I looked at fellow travelers there. I did regret that I didn't get a chance much to really speak more with them and listen to them because the person I was with was hungry, and we got off to leaving there. But I do suggest, Armand, perhaps down the road we can get together, everybody, and take a ride on the Staten Island Ferry or pass by the Statue of Liberty or something, walk along the Hudson River.
Is that you, Gino? Are you Gino?
You found me out, yeah.
Hey, Gino, you're going to throw a party.
Well,
you know, I mean, you're the guy to do it.
Well, everybody, I don't know if I get all 100 of you in my house, but there is the Botanical Gardens right next door to me.
So we could just throw the party at the Botanical Gardens or on the Staten Island Ferry.
Well,
they are a hell of a bunch, though. You know, there is something special about the WBAI crowd. You know, you see them, and they're such good, heartfelt people.
Well, I noticed that, and I know, you know, people may see it from your perspective, like, well, you're there, and, you know, but as someone who's on the outside looking in a bit, I can say the people who came to your gathering, I don't usually see them at some of the other gatherings, and I know they're very intelligent people, and I know they're very heartfelt, and everything you're saying, I agree with, just as somebody from the outside, and I'm sorry, all you folks, I didn't get a chance to really engage and be with you And I hope that we can do some things like this down the road, whether to go to see some of those painters' paintings or the dancers dancing or walk along the Hudson or something. And so that's the only thing I regret about the evening, that it really couldn't last a little longer and we all went off into the evening. Otherwise, Armand, I want to say, Roberta got mentioned yesterday on Gary's show as far as her, what is it, her Heavenly Ambrosia, that soy milk?
The soy milk that she's
soy
doing.
Milk, which I'm looking forward to tasting.
Yeah, nut milk, nut milk.
The nut milk, the almond milk, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, right.
Right, and I'm looking forward to tasting that. And the other thing is, I know time is running out. Will it be possible still that we can get Tony Bennett to be...
We're working on it. We are working. We are hot on Tony Bennett's trail.
Because those eyes, I met him when I was a doorman, and he's got those sparkly eyes, and his spirit is so alive. And I had seen his art show a couple of days before at the National Arts Club, and really beautiful work. And the likenesses of Duke Ellington and Mickey Rooney and Frank Sinatra. I mean, he won't sell those right now, but... they were so lifelike, and I just think he's really a superb example of somebody continuing the Renaissance tradition into America. And again, just want to say, so maybe somebody else could get in, really enjoyed it. Look forward to something like this happening again, Armand, and somehow, some way, hopefully maybe April or something. That's the best time, by the way, for the gardens.
All right, we'll get there, Gino. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Okay, ciao. All
right. 212, lovely guy. Lovely guy. He's been listening to you for 18 years, he said, and I finally got a chance to meet you. 212-209-2900, this is Armando Miller. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air, because we won't be back with you until next Tuesday.
Hello.
Hi, hello.
Oh, hi. Well, you know, something for me, the bathroom, you said that's a great equalizer. For me at work, like 90% of people who won't talk to me, supposedly one of the reasons they give is, oh, you don't wash your hands after you go to the bathroom. And it's true. But I told them, look, if I don't get anything on me, why should I wash my hands and get, you know, water on why should I get water on me that's going to dry out my skin 5 times a day? And so when you say it's a great equalizer, in my case, that hasn't been the case.
Well, Leora, I guess there are exceptions.
All right.
You know, there are exceptions. There are bathrooms and there are bathrooms.
Well, that's what I say. You know, I say the bathroom is not necessarily any dirtier than any other part of the building. You know, and if I get something on me, I know enough to wash my hands. But why are you watching my every move anyway? And I went to the union, and the union said, you know, they have no business, you know, to...
making fun of you because...
Well,
you
yeah,
wash.
But, you know, I know they're just picking on something. If it wasn't that, it would be something else. But I'm still going to, you know, do things according to my own judgment, whether they like it or not, because I know I'm not doing anything wrong.
You're
but,
a fine lady. Thank you very much for calling in, Leora. One of our listeners, 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello.
Yes, Armand, how are you today?
Good. Who is this? Oh, it's a familiar voice.
Yes, my name is Shirley. I'm calling because I'm one of these people that has now decided, past beyond the age of 45, that I am really tired of socialization, especially in the workplace. I find that when people don't know anything about you, they make up things about you, and then you have to live through all of that, especially workplaces that have a lot of women in
it. So, Shirley, who are you angry at?
Not anybody in particular. I think
no,
just,
tell me the person you're really angry at.
Not
pick
angry
one.
At anybody. No one person.
No one person really hurt you? Somebody you thought was a friend who betrayed you?
Yeah.
At your last job, you sure?
I'm sure. I'm positive.
Boy, because you sound really wounded.
Well, you know what it is? I'm tired. I think I've gotten to the point that workplaces that have women create scenarios of jealousy and all of these other things that are just not very good for people that strive in excellence.
How many sisters did you have?
One.
Was she an older sister?
No.
Younger sister?
Yes.
Was she jealous of you, too?
Oh, no. No.
Was your mother jealous of you?
No. Not that I know of.
Did anybody? Did you have any other jealousies when you were little?
No, not when I was growing up a little or anything like that.
And when people were jealous of you, what would they be the most jealous of you for?
Most of the time it's the fact that I work in excellence.
Yeah, so you're excellent, and they would look at you and work in excellence, and they would get jealous because they couldn't compete with you, huh?
Or they feel that it's a competition when in actuality it's not.
Yeah, I hear. I hear. See, you don't want to work there anymore. You want to work for yourself. You want to retire from the workforce, right?
Well, yeah, and in some instances, I have worked for myself.
Yeah, it sounds like you're angry. And it sounds like, Shirley, what you've done is you've taken your anger and you've converted it into some kind of a rationale for withdrawing. I think if you got down to your real anger, you would find yourself renewed in your desire to be out there. But I'm a little worried about what I hear, because what I hear are the footsteps of depression. You know, and I don't want you to get depressed.
Oh, no, I'm not.
I know,
I'm definitely
I know.
Not depressed.
I know you're not.
I'm not angry. I'm not any of that.
I know. I'm just telling you what I hear with my magical ears.
Well, your magical ears
right
now, they're wrong, because there's nothing depressed about me. I don't, everything I do, I mean, I enjoy doing things. I don't isolate from, you know, from people per se. I mean, I do have people that are friends that I talk to and stuff like that. But no, I'm not angry, and I'm not depressed.
And I tell you, one out of every 200 times, I'm absolutely wrong in my perception, and this is probably one of those times.
Okay.
So, listen, but I have to get going, and I'm terribly sorry, because our show's coming to an end. So I thank you for calling in, Shirley. Hey, listen, my friends. Remember, tomorrow, tune into special programming. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. You can get to me through thepositivemind.com, the website. Take a look. Peruse.